Chapter 6. A Non-Violent Way to Fight. Unfortunately, none of these things changed anything for the Indians, so I decided to try a different tactic. It was a non-violent way to fight. We didn't fight with our hands or with guns. We marched, we organized strikes, and sometimes we illegally crossed borders. I called it passive resistance. As a result, we were hurt and often sent to prison. I went to jail many times, and my dear wife, Bar, went too. In 1900, she gave birth to our fourth son, Devdas, but she was still active in our fight. For 7 years, we fought this way. Finally, I was called to meet with General Smuts, the Minister of Defense. Smuts said, "I don't hate your people. You know, I am also a lawyer. I studied with some Indians. I will make sure the law is changed. But first, your people must all register with the authorities." This was the first of many meetings with Smuts, and we often argued. At the same time, we Indians continued to demonstrate and go to jail. Finally, Smuts and I signed an agreement. Indians could now vote in South Africa, and the £3 tax was cancelled. These were just two of the new laws to help the Indians. Before I finally left the country in 1914, I gave Smuts a pair of sandals. I made them for him in jail. Smuts later said, "I have worn these sandals for many summers, but I really haven't got the right to stand in the shoes of such a great man." I cried when I heard this. Not everything was perfect for the Indians in South Africa when I left, but at least some things were better. From South Africa, Bar and I travelled to Britain. 2 days after we arrived, the First World War began. I organized an ambulance corps of 80 Indian university students to help the British, and I volunteered to lead it myself. This made some people very angry. "How can you, the man of non-violence, participate in a war?" they asked me. "The British Empire is protecting me. I must help protect it when it's in trouble," I answered. Unfortunately, I didn't lead the ambulance corps in the end, because I suddenly became very ill. "Go home to India," my doctors said, and I took their advice. On my way home, I translated a book of mine from English into the language of the people from my area. The book was called Home Rule. It explained my ideas of how the Indian people should become free from British rule. In our country, it was the British who decided how an Indian may live. This wasn't fair. Why didn't we have the right to govern our own country? When I arrived in Bombay with my family, many people came to meet me. I was now famous not only in South Africa, but also in India. It was very strange for me. I met with my dear friend, Professor Gokhale. He was my political teacher, my guru. "Spend your first year in India with your eyes and ears open and your mouth closed," he suggested. "India is 700,000 villages. We will not represent the real India until we stand in the hot sun as the labourers do." Not long after he told me this, he died. I felt lost without him in India, but I followed his good advice. I needed time to learn about my country again. I travelled to my home in Porbandar and to the place of my first job as a lawyer in Rajkot. I also went to visit a famous poet in West Bengal. When I talked in public, I spoke only about becoming better people. I said nothing about politics. Many of my friends from South Africa came back to India with me. I needed to find a place for my family and these friends to live. I decided to start an ashram, a small community, and make it a place for us to live together. I took everybody to a small village in the south. We became like one big family in the ashram. Everybody called me Bapu, father, and they called Ba, mother. There were people from many different countries and of many different ages. There were no servants at the ashram. Everybody cleaned their own plates and washed their own clothes. We worked and studied together, and some people taught in the villages near the ashram. Everybody at the ashram followed a few simple rules. You must be honest, you must not be violent, and you must do physical work. When somebody didn't follow the rules or did something wrong, I didn't say anything. I accused myself. Sometimes I fasted for several days because I felt so bad. I now wore a long white cotton shirt, white cotton trousers, and sandals every day. Many of the people in the ashram began to dress in traditional Indian clothes too. We made the clothes ourselves, even the material. People all over Europe and Asia were still fighting, but I stayed on my ashram and didn't say anything about the war. My ideas about it were different from those of the principal political party, the Indian National Congress, and soon it was difficult for me to keep quiet. I fought for the workers and helped the farmers organize strikes to make their conditions better in some parts of the country. I didn't want to fight to change things in the whole country. It wasn't the right time. In 1918, towards the end of the war, it was clear that things weren't going well for the British. So I went from village to village to get people to become soldiers in the British Indian Army and fight in Europe. Very often, I walked 32 kilometers a day because there weren't carts to take me to these small places. I worked too hard, and finally I became very ill and went back home to rest.